Welcome to the Azure Security Podcast, where we discuss topics relating to security, privacy, reliability, and compliance on the Microsoft Cloud Platform.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 114. This week, it's myself, Michael, here by myself. The other guys are all busy. I also have two guests this week to talk about SQL Server 2025 security updates. Peter Van Hover, who is a regular on this podcast. In fact, I think this is number three. And Pratim Dasgupta, again, both from the Azure Data team and the SQL Server team. But before we get to our guests, I want to take a little journey around the news. I have four little items to talk about. The first one is, in case you're not aware, Microsoft Build just finished in Seattle, and both myself and Sarah, we both presented. I presented on Reflections on 25 Years of Writing Secure Code. That's the book. First of all, it's absolutely terrifying that it's been 25 years since the first edition of Writing Secure Code came out. Lots of stories. It was a lot of fun giving the presentation. I also talk about the story where I convinced Bill Gates to write the foreword for the second edition. Just lots of stories, and also how things have progressed over the years, especially from a tooling and sort of knowledge perspective and how threats have evolved. The other one that Sarah did was with Pamela Fox, deploying an end-to-end secure AI application. It's a fun watch, if nothing else. You'll learn a lot from this. So again, I'll provide links to both of those presentations. There are plenty of other security presentations as well, but I just want to call out those too many because, you know, we're both on the podcast. The other one which really caught my eye is a blog post from Ravinder Gupta. It's called Demystifying Azure Private Link: Benefits, Pitfalls, and Best Practices. Honestly, this is probably the best 5-minute read I've ever read on Azure Private Link. It gives a really concrete set of examples of the benefits, how it works, and why you should use it. One thing that we find in the red team is one of the major problems we see is when a service actually has a very flat network. In other words, they don't isolate parts of, you know, critical parts of their infrastructure from other parts of the infrastructure. And that makes it really easy for the red team to traverse across the network. So Private Link really helped, and many other security isolation techniques really help make life really hard for the red team and for attackers for that matter. So if you're not familiar with Private Link, or it's still a bit of a mystery to you, then do go ahead and check out this blog post. The last news item, there's a blog post been written. It's a follow-up from Sarah's blog post, which is Understanding and Mitigating Security Risks in MCP Implementations. There's a follow-up to that. It's not really a follow-up. It's another blog post, sort of concerns about MCP from a security standpoint and what we're doing at Microsoft to help mitigate some of those issues. So again, if you're using MCP, which is the Model Context Protocol used to build AI applications, where you sort of link things together, then do go take a good look at this. All right, that's the news out of the way. So let's turn our attention to the guests. As I mentioned, this week we have two guests, Pratim and Peter. So gentlemen, why don't you go and just take a moment and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Hello, everybody. I'm Pratim Dasgupta, and I'm the product manager working on identity and SQL authentication.
Hi, everybody. Yes, I'm Peter. I'm also a PM, product manager in the data platform security team, and I'm managing everything related to data encryption, so transparent data encryption, always encrypted, and also Ledger, which is everything related to data integrity and not data encryption.
All right. So actually, before we get stuck into the actual content, so first of all, Peter, since I think last time we spoke on the podcast, you got a promotion, right?
Oh, yes, I did, yeah. I'm a senior PM now.
You're a senior PM, fantastic. That's good. Nah, good stuff, man. You do good stuff, man. So congratulations.
Thanks.
Let's get stuck into this. So we got three broad categories, end-to-end authentication, cryptographic updates, and then security cache improvements. So why don't we start with Pratim? And if you want to go through the main end-to-end authentication improvements in SQL Server 2025.
Oh, yeah, sure. So Michael, as you'd already be knowing, we have a pretty big push that we do not want to use passwords. I mean, Entra is there from a long, long time. But not for our customers that much. If you have tried in SQL Server 2022, which is an on-prem, though you can enable Entra and you can remove SQL logins which use passwords, but you still rely on credentials like certificates to set the entry. So in a way, the passwords are gone, but you are still relying on some kind of credential, right? That can be stolen and hacked and whatnot, right? But with 2025 on ARC-enabled machines, you would not even need a credential to start up your Entra authentication on SQL. There's a managed identity that's provisioned by the ARC agent itself. So what I mean is, as soon as your Windows VM in an on-prem system is ARC-enabled, you get a managed identity provision. So that VM is actually registered with Entra servers. And now in SQL 2025, we have taught SQL Server to use that identity and speak to Entra service to authenticate any users and logins. On top of that, you can also use that identity for outbound connections. For example, you want to take a backup from SQL database to Azure storage, maybe. You don't have to use any SAS keys or anything for that storage. You can use that identity, give that identity a block contributor access, the usual thing that you do for a storage access. And there you go, using backup restore usual commands and a create credential manage identity SQL. Credential free, you can take backups and you can restore backups. So this is one of the examples that we are pushing forward. You can also use EKM for that. This is an effort that we plan to keep on doing it. Push forward for every feature not to use any kind of credential.
So I just want to ask you a question about the managed identity and just about the lack of credentials. So I'm sort of in a bit of a unique position here because, first of all, you know, I used to work in the Azure data team, so very familiar with, you know, SQL Server and so on. But now work in the red team, and you know, the first thing that we go hunting for is credentials, right? I mean, if we can find credentials, then that lets us traverse across the network. And a lot of the credential work or removing credentials that are being done across the company are there because of the Secure Future Initiative work, right, which is removing credentials from the environment. So is this an example of removing credentials from the environment to sort of help with the SFI requirements?
Yes. So that is one of the prime motto, that any service or every service that Microsoft provisions and it's customer-facing or not, we do not want folks like you, me, or any user to manage their own credential. And it's not limited to passwords. It's anything in any artifact that can be used to authenticate. Right?
We've had issues where we've found, you know, SAS tokens that have led to essentially exploitation of storage accounts. So yeah, anything where a credential is persisted is a number one target of attackers. So it's magnificent to see SQL Server, you know, going above and beyond to make sure that these things are removed.
Yes. So it's not completely new. So if you are a VM customer, like completely Azure customer, you are already using Azure VMs, you could have done it in SQL 2022. So 2022 and Azure VMs already knew how to use managed identities, but then we are just restricting every customer to come to Azure, right? With this effort, even the customers who are not an Azure shop, just an on-prem shop, can actually take use of this. So it's an effort to secure everybody, I'd say.
All right. Well, that's the intro authentication stuff out of the way. That was short and sweet. But again, I really want to stress, I think these changes are really important. I mean, we need to, as a world, we need to get away from these sort of credentials that have, you know, that can be persisted somewhere because, again, the attackers go after them. All right. So next thing is cryptographic updates. And I think that's where you come in, Peter.
Yep, that's right. Most of the crypto updates, the users of SQL Server 2025, they won't even probably notice it because we're doing some stuff under the covers. Well, if you would look in system tables, you will notice that we're using different types of algorithms and better algorithms. But yeah, mainly the users, they will not notice it that we have made SQL Server even stronger on security level. The first one, what we've done, Michael, and you're probably familiar with it, is the PBKDF for password hashes. We've enabled this by default in SQL Server 2025. So what we did in previous versions of SQL, we were using a SHA-512 hash with a 32-bit random and a unique salt. So that was a pretty good method to make it impossible for hackers to fetch passwords that are stored in SQL Server. Now, what we've done is we're using that new algorithm, so the PBKDF, and we're doing we're still using that SHA-512 hash, but we're hashing the password instead of one time, we're hashing it multiple times, like 100,000 iterations, which, yeah, significantly is slowing down brute force attacks, of course, by using this. How will customers know that they're using this new functionality? Well, if you look at the passwords that are stored in the SQL login system table, you will notice that the first byte is the version of the algorithm that is used, and in SQL Server 2025, that is going to be 03. If you still see 02, then it means that you're using the old algorithm here.
A little bit of context to this, as you kind of mentioned, I was actually the PM for this particular feature back in the day when we first implemented it. So it was actually a requirement that came in from a very large bank in the US who needed it for compliance reasons. So we worked closely with the customer, and we produced a version, as you mentioned. So PBKDF stands for password-based key derivation function, and we iterate over the hash, or the originating password. And as you say, a unique salt. I'm so glad you said unique salt. A lot of people say random salt. It doesn't have to be random. It has to be unique.
Yeah.
So using a unique salt and a random password, and hopefully a random password, and then iterates over that 100,000 times, which, by the way, at Microsoft is the lower limit under the Microsoft Security Development Lifecycle for PBKDFs. And then we store that result. And historically, it was there in SQL Server 2025, but we hid it behind a trace flag. So it was off by default. And it's nice to see that it's on by default. And as you mentioned, this is version 3, hence the first byte is 03. But we only change, make sure, is this correct? I assume this is the case. We don't auto-migrate from version 2 to version 3 because we can't, because no. We don't have the password, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question, Michael. What we do, sorry to interrupt you, is when you migrate a login or you script a login from SQL 2022, and you run that script on SQL 2025, we will still use the old algorithm. Until you do an alter login and you change the password, then we will start using the new algorithm. But if you don't change anything, we will still use the old algorithm. So it's transparent if you migrate logins.
And that's just so incredibly important, because we don't have the password, so we can't generate the new password verifier, right? So we don't store the password, we store the verifier of the password.
Correct.
That's good. Okay, that's great news. All right, what else we got?
The second one that we have is the OAP support for certificates and asymmetric keys. So in Azure SQL and SQL Server, the RSA algorithm is used for asymmetric encryption. The RSA algorithm cannot be used in its pure form. So what we're doing to achieve security, these messages, they require padding, right? So currently we're using, or the data is encrypted with RSA using the PKCS version 1.5, but that is, that has a specific weakness, right? So what we've did is we upgraded it to a newer version with a new padding type called optimal asymmetric encryption padding, or the OAEP, right? So that introduces some hashing between the RSA encryption and the padding check, right? Which makes it significantly much more difficult for an attacker to understand what they can see.
Yeah, there's a really nasty vulnerability called a padding oracle attack.
Yeah.
And OAEP essentially mitigates that, which is good. Always a good thing.
Yeah. Again, something you cannot see unless you look in a system table called key encryptions, where you will see that the certificate or the asymmetric key, the key that is encrypted by the certificate or the asymmetric key is using that OAEP.
So on that topic of OAEP, I mean, did we add that because it's a fun thing to do, or did we actually add it because customers ask for it, compliance reasons, modern threats, all of the above?
Yes, all of the above, Michael.
Okay, that's right. Fair enough.
We just wanted to make it better and stronger, as always. So we are the most secure database platform. So yeah, we wanted to make it even stronger. And that's the reason also why we implemented this.
So the next topic is TDS8, TLS 1.3 support, which is one of my favorite topics. So you care to go into some depth about that?
SQL Server 2022 already supported TDS 8.0. So you could use an extra parameter in your connection string, this encryption equals strict, which means that at that point, you were using TDS 8.0. On the other hand, you also had to upgrade your drivers. But anyway, we already supported it. The problem was, Michael, that in SQL 2022, all our internal features like SQL agent, like BCP, always-on availability groups, all these features, they were not using TDS 8.0. So we wanted to address this problem. And now in SQL Server 2025, all our internal features will support TDS 8.0. We're not there yet, so we're still in public preview. And some of the features like SQL Command and BCP, they already support it, but the others will come later, probably by GA, but for sure, they will all use TDS 8.0.
And so for clarification, so TDS is tabular data stream, right, which is the native SQL Server communications protocol on the network?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, and then TLS is just, well, hopefully we all know what TLS is at this point. And just a little bit of history. So back in the day, so prior to TDS 8, there were some very strong interdependencies between TDS prior to 8 and TLS that made it really, really difficult to upgrade TLS protocol versions to more modern versions. So now we've done all that hard work to break the two apart and break the dependencies. So now they can be essentially upgraded independently, which is really good news, which is the way it should be, right? It really should just be, you know, the same way HTTPS works, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we can upgrade HTTP if we wanted to underneath the covers. We can use 1.0, 1.1, 2.0, whatever. And then, you know, if we want, and then just change the TLS protocol version at will. And luckily we're in a position like that now with TDS, which is great to see. Good news.
Yeah.
All right, last one is security cache improvements. What the heck is that?
Yeah, that's a known problem that existed for years that we finally resolved. And the problem is, well, every time that a user or a login makes a connection to SQL Server, what we're doing is we're storing all these permissions of the users and the logins in the security cache, right? One of the benefits of storing that in the cache is, of course, it's speeding up the query execution. Now, the problem is that if there are certain actions that will invalidate that security cache, for example, if you create a new login on the server or if you change the permissions of a specific login, if you drop a login, either way. So all these actions will invalidate the cache and not, and what I mean by that is it will invalidate the cache of the whole database or the whole server, depending if it's a login or a database permission that you've changed. Now, this means that every single connection that is open at that point to your instance will need to rebuild the security cache from scratch, right? And this can significantly impact the performance on the server, right? If you just have a couple of connections, no worries. You won't see any difference. But if you have like thousands of connections that needs to rebuild all their cache entries, yeah, definitely you will notice some performance impact. So what we've done, Michael, we addressed that problem, and currently in SQL Server 2025, we're only invalidating the cache for a specific login. Let's say the three of us, we have a login, and I change a permission in my login. It means that my cache will be invalidated, but not yours and not the cache of Pratim, which, yeah, of course, reduces that performance impact. Currently, it applies to create and drop login scenarios and permission changes on individual logins. We're currently in public preview. By GA, we should also cover alter login as well. for group logins. So it only works currently for individual logins. For group logins, you will continue to experience the server level invalidations. We're working on that, and probably, we don't have any timeline yet, but probably it will be released in one of the next CU updates that we will do on SQL Server 2025. But yeah, huge improvement here, and a lot of our customers will be happy with this improvement.
So a couple of things. So first of all, CU being cumulative update.
Yes.
And so is it all, are you saying it's always been this way until like SQL Server 2025? My goodness.
Yes.
So that must have caused like my guess is this was a real nagging customer pain point, support pain point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah. Support team, they had lots of incidents because of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And my guess is it probably wasn't a very easy fix. That's why it probably took a while to get done.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And still is. Yeah. So command by command, because there are lots of commands that are triggering in security cache invalidation. So we need to cover them both. So we currently, like I said, we have create and drop and alter login, but there are plenty more, like create application role or create certificate. Also, invalidates the cache. So yeah, we still have some work to do, Michael.
Wow. Well, that's good to see though. I mean, anything that improves performance and improves security at the same time is always a good thing.
Yes.
Alrighty. All right. So one thing we started asking our guests, we probably started just a couple of months ago now, is, so what does a typical day look like? Like what is when you come to work, what does a typical day look like?
Every day before I sleep, I try to see what I have in the next day's meeting, and for whatever reason, every day starts different. I mean, as soon as I open my emails, there are a bunch of emails that I'll have to answer and then go to meetings. And so long story short, every day is a little bit different. But the vanilla part is you have a bunch of meetings, meet with people, answer customer queries, and then take some time to write specs, update customer documentations, speak with engineering to see what issues are going on, if we are on the time for deliveries. And if you get some time, then read about new features that we should be doing and what our competitors are doing and whatnot, and read to and hear podcasts, see videos so that I learn. Yeah, it's a mixed bag, I'd say.
My day starts with a coffee. I cannot start without coffee. So first things first, coffee. I'm in a different time zone than Pratim and my other colleagues. So I'm based in Europe, which is a huge advantage for me, because when I start my working day, everybody else is asleep. So I can do, I can read all the emails. I can prepare the next meetings for the day. I never get disturbed, right? I just can do whatever I want. I don't get not that many emails during the day. So what I do, I typically work around my noon time, and then sometimes I just go for a run or go out walk with my dog, and then I start again at 3-4 in the afternoon with all the calls that I have with people in Redmond, with engineering, with other PMs, working on customer managed key in Fabric, which takes a lot of my time. Working on SQL Server 2025, preparing presentations and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's how my life looks like.
I like, Pratim, that you said, you're very conscious of making sure you stay on top of things. I think that's really important, carve out some time to sort of learn, new stuff. All right, so let's bring this episode to an end. So we like to ask our guests something we've done since the very beginning, is if you had just one final thought to leave our listeners with, and what would it be?
Yeah, I can get started with it. So because SQL 2025, the Entra features are ARC dependent, so I would say if one of our customers is trying it, they should make sure that the ARC extensions and the SQL ARC extensions are the latest ones so that they don't run into some random issues.
All right. And I would say we've made SQL 2025 even more secure. So we did a couple of crypto updates. We've done updates on the security cache. So yeah, we always say secure by default, and that is still true. And last but not least, go download SQL Server and just try it out yourself.
Very cool. All right, let's now officially bring this episode to an end. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me this week. I know you guys are both very, very busy, so I appreciate you taking the time. And to all our listeners out there, we hope you found this episode useful. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Azure Security Podcast. You can find show notes and other resources at our website, azsecuritypodcast.net. If you have any questions, please find us on Twitter at AzureSecPod. Background music is from ccmixter.com and licensed under the Creative Commons license.